This is the IBJ podcast for the week of August the 30th, 2021, brought to you by Resultant, formerly KSM Consulting. I'm your host, Mason King. Welcome back to the podcast, everybody. We have come a long way to arrive at this point. We're about 6 months away from the opening of the city and county's $590 million community justice campus. It's been at least 6 years in the planning between two mayoral administrations. The project first was earmarked for the former site of the GM stamping plant on the northwest side of downtown. Now it's actually nearing completion in the Twin Air neighborhood east of downtown. Now we can't expect you to have followed this every step of the way. So here it is in a nutshell. The Community Justice Campus is intended to unify, streamline, and modernize big chunks of the city and county's law enforcement and judiciary operations. For example, Marin County's two jails, which are located several blocks from each other downtown, will be combined into a four-story adult detention center. It will have space for 2,700 general population beds, 300 specialty beds. The Marin County Sheriff's Department also will be located on the campus. The Marin County Court System, now largely located in the City-County building, will be realigned and transplanted to a new 12-story, 475,000-square-foot building. It's the centerpiece of the whole project. The campus also includes the Assessment Intervention Center, which will be used to assess individuals with apparent behavioral health and/or substance abuse issues who run afoul of law enforcement. Officials want to avoid arrests, if possible, and help those individuals get the help they need. So that's the core of the campus. There are other agencies and offices central to the justice system scattered all over downtown that also plan to be located on the campus. That includes, for example, the Marin County Public Defender Agency, the Marin County Superior Court Probation Department. They're slated for a privately developed professional building on the campus. And now, here at long last, we have come to the subject of today's podcast. Mayor Hogsett and other city-county officials want the Marin County Prosecutor's Office to relocate to the campus as well. It sort of seems like a gimme. Now, you might be like me in that your experience with prosecutors is limited to watching the same two or three of them every week on Law & Order. Well, the Marin County Prosecutor's Office is a huge operation with a staff of more than 400 people. Last week, IBJ's Mickey Shuey and Leslie Bonilla Muniz broke the story that Marin County Prosecutor Ryan Mears has not committed to moving the office to the campus. He says he's undecided and is worried about the cost. The private developer behind the professional buildings needs that commitment to make the numbers work on the second of its two buildings that have been planned. Mickey and Leslie are our guests this week to dig deeper into the surprising news. I'm pleased to welcome back to the podcast Mickey Shuey, who covers real estate and hospitality. Thank you, Mickey.
Thanks for having me.
And making her debut on the IBJ podcast is the great Leslie Bonilla Muniz, who covers city government, poverty, and urban affairs for IBJ. Thank you for making time.
Thanks so much for having me.
So we've been talking about the development of the Criminal Justice Center for at least 8 years now. And in fact, it has undergone a subtle name change over that time. It's now called the Community Justice Campus. The city finally broke ground in the Twin Air neighborhood in roughly 2018. The price tag for just the core elements of the campus is $590 million. Quite a bit of it is finished now. Several elements of the project are already up and running. Can we review, both for ourselves and the folks at home, probably you don't cover this on a day-to-day basis, what the campus will consist of and why the city county government wanted to do this project in the first place?
Yeah, so to go to your second question first, actually, obviously I was not here when this 8 years ago when discussions first began, but the point was to kind of rethink what the criminal justice system looks like in Indianapolis, and that's A, and then B, have them all be in the same spot, because right now we've got jail one, jail two, kind of scattered, and then we've got like the seat of city county government downtown, and the hope for city officials was to just kind of put these into one place and unify all the entire system for, I guess, ease for employees, for people that are involved in the justice system. system. And then in terms of what it's going to consist of, as you said, that $590 million is for the core, and that includes the Assessment and Intervention Center, which opened in December last year, and then the jail, the sheriff's office, and the courthouse. But then there's these other pieces that are being funded by other means. One of Mayor Joe Hogsett's pieces to his Circle City Forward plan are some bonds for a new forensics lab that they dedicated $30 million to that, $16 million to a coroner's facility, and some more to a youth and family services center. And all of those, two of those are confirmed. The last one, not entirely sure if it's going to be on the campus. And then there's also additional funding for the Assessment and Intervention Center. They asked the City County Council for about $700,000. So I think that's about it. And then, of course, there's these privately developed buildings, these office buildings for some other pieces of the justice system.
Yeah, Mickey, tell me about these privately developed buildings. I assume that things like the courthouse, the jail, the assessment center, those will be owned by city county government. Tell us about these office structures.
Those city elements will indeed be owned by the city, especially through a 12-story, 475,000-square-foot building mainly. But then there are these two proposed privately developed buildings, each expected to be about 135,000 square feet, that would house groups like the prosecutor's office potentially, and we'll talk about that here soon, but then also the public defender's office, and then some probate operations. And really, they're intended to kind of bring into the fold these other ancillary departments that play a key role in the city's criminal justice system, but don't necessarily have a role to share a building with the courts directly, and may not want to.
Yeah. And you mentioned the courthouse facility, which is got to be the centerpiece of this project. It's 12 stories, 400-some-thousand square feet, which will house this realigned court system for Marion County. So these office buildings will be separate. Tell me how these are going to be developed.
So they're being developed in phases, as is the rest of the campus, and they're being developed mainly through Browning Investments, local firm Browning Investments, but then they've also partnered with Davis and Associates on these developments as well. And they're calling this development Equitas, which is the Latin word for equity, or the Latin word from which equity is derived. And that's really, in the city's mind, what this campus is all about, creating equity in criminal justice matters. So this privately developed project is really going to be done as Browning sees fit, in that they've already signed a lease with the public defender's office and probate offices to move to this first building. What we don't know is what's going to happen with the second building, because as we'll discuss, prosecutor is a little bit on the fence right now as to whether they want to move into that second building, which they would be the main anchor for.
Yeah, so that was one of my questions. How does the prosecutor's office fit in here? How many people work in the prosecutor's office, and where are they located now?
So the prosecutor's office is a 415-person agency. They have about 150 attorneys, and they occupy just over 85,000 square feet in the building at 251 East Ohio Street. That's the building on the opposite side of the parking garage on Ohio Street from what's known as the Gold Building.
Right. That's right. Yeah. It's like on the other side of the City Market Building, with the City County Building to the south.
Yes. Right. Yes. And the Public Defender's Office is currently in the Gold Building itself. So to just kind of give some perspective of where they are now, and they'd be in buildings next to each other if they both go out to the campus.
And if they don't, then the prosecutor will be 3 miles away.
That seems like it'd be problematic. So let's get to that. Why hasn't the prosecutor's office committed to being a part of this campus? You would assume that in any criminal justice proceeding, the prosecutor would be, you know, one of the main, I don't want to say suspects, but certainly would be one of the main players. Why is there hesitancy for them to commit?
So Prosecutor Ryan Mears, who has been in his post since 2019 after Terry Curry stepped down from the post, he's told us that he's really worried about the cost of this to his office and to taxpayers. In addition to that, the office already signed a pretty inexpensive 16-year lease in 2017 for its current space. And basically that locks them in at paying about $17.50 per square foot, and that includes utilities and janitorial services, as well as guaranteed parking. Now, a move to the Justice campus would start at no less than $18 per square foot, and that would be for about 82,000 square feet of space across three floors and then a lobby area on the first floor. And that's from a lease, a proposed lease that we obtained through a public record request. That cost would probably actually go up to about $26 per square foot, if not a little bit more, once you get to the end of that 20-year lease. In addition to that, you have to factor in the utilities and janitorial services, which is going to raise that $18 per square foot by about $7 to $8, according to real estate sources I've talked to. And lastly, Mears really has cited parking as a concern for his staff because his office pays for parking for all his employees, but the proposed lease is only setting aside 25 guaranteed parking spaces in this new garage they're proposing. So there's a lot of questions about the form of the lease and what exactly the prosecutor's office would get out of it based on the one that based on the last lease, proposed lease that was provided to the prosecutor's office last year.
Okay, let's take a quick break to hear from our sponsor. This is the IBJ Podcast.
The right data and technology solution can transform your business. KSM Consulting is now Resultant and still passionate about solving problems no one else can. Still collaborating with our clients to find the best answer, not the easy answer. Visit Resultant.com to see what's possible for your organization.
All right, we're back with this week's edition of the IBJ Podcast. We're talking with reporters Mickey Shuey and Leslie Bonilla-Muniz about whether the Marion County Prosecutor's Office will relocate to the new Community Justice Campus.
So the first question that I had when I heard about this is why does the prosecutor's office have autonomy in this situation? Why, how is it that it can decide whether or not it wants to be a part of this? Can't the mayor just say, you guys are going here because you're a part of the team?
So they have autonomy because the prosecutor's office, while it has its budget approved by the city, the prosecutor is an elected official by the county. So he essentially has autonomy over his own office operations.
Now, and it's not like the prosecutor didn't know that it would be asked to move to a criminal justice campus at some point in the relatively near future. So this goes back to the Terry Curry administration, but why did it sign a 16-year lease extension in 2017 that sort of indicates that they were hesitant even back then?
Really, they'd hit a point where they either had to re-up with their current office space or find a new place to go. And they really liked their space at that time. I mean, they still do, especially given that it's right downtown and very close to the city-county building. But they ended up signing this long lease just because that's where negotiations led. And because while there was this talk of a larger campus and something was in the works for that, they didn't know when exactly they would actually end up out there. I mean, they will have to negotiate an exit from their current space if they ultimately go to the CJC. It's not really clear what that looks like or how much they'll have to pay to get out of that lease.
So we've gotten this far down the road. The main part of the campus, correct me if I'm wrong, is supposed to open at the end of this year. Is that right?
Yeah, so they're doing the moving throughout the end of this year, and the city officials have recently said into quarter one of next year.
So the courts will be over there by quarter one next year. The jails will be open by quarter one next year.
Yes.
Okay, so we are far down this road. It just seems odd that the prosecutor got this far without making a commitment. Has there been something going on behind the scenes?
Well, one thing I'll say is that those privately developed buildings have a later timeline than the bulk of the campus.
So really, the prosecutor's office has kind of had on and off conversations with the mayor's office and his representatives on this. Really, they haven't talked much in the past couple months just because budget season is taking over for the city. And as any insider in the city will tell you, that takes a lot of time for everybody. So they've kind of put that on hold. But really, they were working toward trying to find a resolution in recent months. They just have not determined what that will look like yet.
So what does Mayor Hogsett say about all this?
When we were able to ask him at the most recent monthly media breakfast that his administration does, he just kind of said, I mean, obviously that was part of the intent, was to have them there. His controller, who's Ken Clark, they've both said that this is kind of the intention, is to have it be like a one-stop shop for everything or almost everything criminal justice, law enforcement related.
So the message that they have for the prosecutor's office and Ryan Mears is, we really, really want you to be there. Have they said anything about, we will help you financially somehow, or we will make this worth your while?
Yeah, so Ken at that breakfast said that his office has made commitments to the prosecutor's office that, I think his wording was that they want them to feel comfortable that their budget is protected, basically. But as we kind of mentioned, negotiations have been pretty much stalled for the last few little while there.
And it feels like they've kind of hit the point where whether propelled by our story or not, they've kind of hit the public negotiation side of things, where both sides are kind of trying to make their case to the public, where we don't know what's actually happening behind closed doors, whether they've actually had these conversations with each other behind closed doors, that the prosecutor thinks it all comes out of cost and the city is saying, well, we'll help you. Is that happening privately? We don't know. All we know is what they're telling us on the record at this point.
So if we had to assume, what is happening now is they're still trying to hammer this out.
Exactly.
Well, maybe they'll get around to it, but I don't know. I mean, as they said, like Ken is in charge of budget and new leases go through him. So like he is one of those people who's really wrapped up in what's happening with the municipal budget. And so are a lot of the other city officials. Like Mears was just in front of the city county council, I want to say last week, presenting his own budget. So I don't know if they're sitting down right now to do it, but they will be.
Is the prosecutor's office proposing that it can still be effective while not actually being on the campus?
Yeah.
I'll let you take this one.
I mean, this is an interview you did, but yeah, I mean, Prosecutor Mears was basically like, you know, the pandemic has obviously changed things, that people can work from home. This is an issue for all of city county government, that they don't necessarily know how much space they need because of remote work. Ken Clark told us the other day that their kind of old pre-pandemic estimates are inaccurate. So that was definitely one point that he raised, was that, like, you know, people still work from home and that they can make the commute.
Does a prosecutor not need to be present in court during a proceeding?
So that's the thing. What he seemed to have been trying to address was the fact that if they're going to be in court, then obviously they'll still need to be there for most of that. The operations of the prosecutor's office are largely the same, but how they actually accomplish things like signing documents. You don't necessarily need to be in the room with somebody if you're going to be signing documents pertaining to a case. You can do that remotely now. Obviously, they'd still have to make that drive to and from the Twin Air site if they opt to stay downtown or at least not go to the CJC. But he seems to feel like they can get away with being wherever they want to be as long as in the downtown core near the CJC.
Leslie, you wrote a few months ago about the concerns of the folks who live in the Twin Air neighborhood, which is, I mean, definitely a transitional neighborhood, and I think on one hand sees this as an opportunity for greater economic development in the neighborhood, but at the same time, there's several things that they're worried about. Do you have a sense of where they are right now in their support for this project?
I mean, there has been a lot of community engagement. There is a coalition of neighborhood groups in the area that meet regularly with, you know, like Browning, for example, presented at one of those meetings a few months ago talking about their plans for the first office building. And so there's definitely a lot of communication between interested residents, between neighborhood leaders. But they definitely have concerns, even starting from the name. As you noted at the beginning of this podcast, the initial name was the Criminal Justice Campus, and I had, you know, neighborhood residents, leaders saying that, like, we don't want to be known as, like, a hub for criminal justice activity. Like, so, you know, it's been changed to Community Justice Campus, but that's definitely even a symbolic note of their problems with some of this. Another one that came up with basically everyone that I talked to was the issue of overnight jail releases. You know, downtown is different because you've got the transportation center right there. Basically, every bus line in the city goes through there. And so there was a real concern that, you know, people would be stranded there. A lot of people talked about how the homeless population has been growing and that they don't want to exacerbate the problem by having more people who don't have a way to get home, or, you know, a way to find someone that they can stay with. That would just lead to more people being in that neighborhood without a place to go and just kind of stranding them there. So this
is an ongoing concern still between the residents,
yes,
and the city.
That was an issue that was very much in discussion back when I was writing, and I don't think there really has been any resolution besides overnight jail releases. I think another big problem for them, to go back to the issue of criminal versus community justice campus, is making sure that whatever development happens there really benefits actual residents, that it isn't just a fast track to gentrification, that the new amenities that develop there are not just for commuters, that it also is intended for current residents. And so there is some action on that front. There's a lot of Southeast Neighborhood Development is really, it's a CDC, a community development corporation, that's pretty active there. It's across the street from the new campus. And they're working on some stuff, including like centers to help entrepreneurs kind of move or even start businesses, and just kind of trying to provide additional childcare for people, trying to get residents involved in the construction work, and just trying to kind of tie things more into the neighborhood. But for people who live there, there's a very real risk that it's just going to be there and not do anything for them.
Well, great. Well, let's check back in 6 to 8 months and see how this thing all shakes out.
Yeah.
Thanks for your time, guys.
Thanks so much for having us.
My thanks again to Mickey and Leslie. Keep watching IBJ.com for more of their reporting as the Community Justice Campus continues to take shape. And before you get on with the rest of your week, there are a few strong stories in the latest issue of IBJ I want to bring to your attention. Number one, local arts organizations and event promoters are desperate to keep COVID-19 from ruining another season. IBJ's Susan Orr reports that they're using strategies such as vaccination requirements, mask mandates, and capacity restrictions to preserve their ability to hold in-person events. Also in this week's paper, John Russell charts the rise and fall of Windstream Technologies Incorporated, a green energy darling that failed to repay millions of dollars in federally guaranteed loans. And Emily Ketterer explores how the lack of childcare providers is putting stress on parents hoping to return to work in person. Again, you can read all these stories in the latest print edition of IBJ or online at IBJ.com. I will say it is quite a bit easier to access all of the latest local news about business and politics and all of IBJ's data on Central Indiana's business, community, and economy if you're a subscriber. It works out to about $2 per week for actionable information you're not going to find anywhere else. Just go to IBJ.com and click on the subscribe button. And thanks again for making time this week for the IBJ podcast, which is edited by Leslie Weidenbender. I'm Mason King. Hang in there, everybody. We'll be back again next week.